listening to the All Things Good podcast.
Hello and welcome to the ATG podcast. Today I'm joined by Allison Levine. Allison, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. Thank you for joining us. For everyone listening, Allison is a very successful mountaineer, adventurer, speaker, New York Times bestselling author. She's also one of only 20 people to ever complete the Adventure Grand Slam, which I think is amazing, and we'll talk about that soon. She's also the team captain of the first American Women's Everest expedition. So Allison, thank you for joining us. You have, you know, some amazing accomplishments. I like to start in the early stages. So, you know, how did you first kind of get into, you know, your journey of hiking and, you know, adventuring?
Yeah. So I grew up in Phoenix, Arizona. And when I was younger, I was always really intrigued by the stories of the early Arctic and Antarctic explorers, the early mountaineers. So I'd read these books about, I'd read books and watch documentary films about these people and these, you know, remote extreme environments. I think because it felt like an escape from the oppressive Arizona heat in the summertime. So I'd read books and I'd watch films, but I never actually thought I would go to those places because I had some health challenges as a kid. I was born with a hole in my heart that got bigger as I got older. So I had my first heart surgery when I was 17. And that one was not successful, but I had my second one when I turned 30. And at that point, this light bulb kind of went on in my head. And I thought, okay, if I want to know what it's like to be this guy, you know, Reinhold Messner, and drag a 150-pound sled across 600 miles of Antarctic ice, then I should go do it instead of just reading about it. If I want to know what it's like to be these, you know, these mountaineers going to these remote mountain ranges, then I should go to the mountains instead of watching documentary films about them. And if these other guys can do this stuff, why can't I do it too? So I climbed my first mountain when I turned 30. I was 32 years old, actually, when I started. So I'm 55 right now. So I've been doing it for a while at this point.
Yeah, geez, you really went the opposite of the Arizona heat, huh? Some negative temperatures, correct?
Pardon?
Some negative, temperatures from hiking, you know, Antarctica.
Oh, yeah, in those environments. Yes, definitely.
What was, you know, like the first peak that you hiked, and really what was kind of the challenge of, I mean, you know, as a lot of people listening probably know, I mean, hiking like a seven summit is a huge deal. My friend actually hiked his first seven summit last year. He hiked Kilimanjaro, and I've always been interested, you know, talking about his experience. So what was your first experience like?
That is, so first of all, I was just going to talk about Kilimanjaro. So that was the first mountain I ever climbed. And after my second heart surgery, you know, about a few months later, this light bulb went on in my head. And I thought, okay, if I want to know what it's like to be these explorers, and I should go to these places. So I made plans with two girlfriends to go to Kilimanjaro. And I, you know, growing up in Phoenix, I didn't have any warm clothes or anything. So I borrowed, you know, I had to borrow a fleece jacket, Gore-Tex jacket, borrow a backpack. I borrowed everything except for hiking boots. I bought my own hiking boots, like at an REI secondhand sale. And we had these plans to go to Kilimanjaro. I was all excited because I was going to celebrate, you know, I wanted to do something to celebrate my newfound state of good health. And then a couple of weeks before we left, my girlfriends decided that they wanted to go to Club Med in Cancun instead. And so I was not interested in that. You know, having grown up in Phoenix, I didn't care so much about going somewhere warm. You know, I grew up in warm weather. So I had frequent flyer miles, and I used all my frequent flyer miles. And I just went, I bought a plane ticket to Tanzania, and I went to Tanzania just by myself. And I got to the base of Kilimanjaro, and I think it cost me $200 to hire a local guide at the base of the mountain. I hired local guide and porters. This is back in 1998. And so it was a lot less expensive then. Rates have gone up quite a bit from so that was the first mountain I ever went to. And for me, even though Kilimanjaro, it's not technical, you don't need any special skills or special equipment to do that trek, and thousands of people do it every year. But for me, it was an important mountain because It's where I learned that even when you feel like quitting, you can still put one foot in front of the other. So it's Summit Dan Kilimanjaro, my first time at high altitude. And like I said, Kilimanjaro doesn't require any special skills or, you know, technical training, but it is quite high. It's over 19,000 feet. So I'm feeling the altitude on Summit Day. I'm feeling the altitude headache. I'm feeling sick to my stomach. And I thought, okay, I'm going to turn around and go down. I'm definitely going to, because I feel so sick, I'm going to turn around and go down. But before I turn around, I'm just going to take one more step. So I took one more step. All right, I'm definitely going to have to turn around and go down because I feel terrible. But before I do, I'm just going to take like one or two more steps. I want to see what the view looks like from over here. And I would go to like, right, a, you know, go up a little bit further on the trail. All right, well, now that I'm here, I'm going to go up just, you know, another step or two. And I do that. Well, eventually I found myself at the top of the mountain. And for me, it was such an important experience because that's where I realized that it's just about putting one foot in front of the other. And even when you feel like you need to quit, you have a banging headache, you feel sick to your stomach, you can almost always take one more step, yeah, right? So that for me was, it was like a life-changing climb because on every subsequent mountain, every time I felt like I should quit, I thought, well, hang on, because I felt like this before and I took one more step. And if I did it before, I can do it again. Now, that said, you have to know your limits, right? Because when you get onto some of the higher mountains, like Mount Everest or something like that, you have to, first of all, you have to remember the summit of any mountain is only the halfway point. The summit is not the goal. The summit is your halfway point, okay, because you have to be able to get yourself back down. And most of the deaths that occur on Mount Everest occur after people have reached the summit because they use everything they've got in them to get themselves to the top and they don't have enough energy left to get themselves back down. So while it is good to have that sense of determination and to be relentless and to have that sense of grit, you also have to keep your own health and safety in mind and know where your limits are and know where your turnaround point is because you can always go back. The mountain will always be there. You can always go back and try it again. So I always tell people to err on the side of being conservative. But yes, we can all typically push ourselves a bit further than we think we can go.
Right. And, you know, it's a great metaphor for life, kind of, you know, like, yeah, you know, you've talked about it in your book as well, where, you know, like, pushing yourself, but you know, you make a great point too. You have to know your body, your mental health, and kind of, you know, like you said, like say it's a business challenge or something and you push yourself hard enough. I mean, you can always come back to that business challenge or something, right, you know? My friend who actually hiked Kilimanjaro, he said he got to the summit and they were ready to go up further. And he said he was, you know, throwing up and stuff from the altitude. But the person he was hiking with was a double amputee veteran. And he was, cause it was like on his bucket list to hike. And my buddy was like, well, if he's going up, I can't just stay down here.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You just have to dig down deep and know, like you can always put one foot in front of the other. You know, the people that get to the top of Mount Everest aren't necessarily the best and the fastest and the most skilled climbers. They're the most relentless and they're the ones that are willing to suffer.
What would you say was your toughest adventure? Was it Mount Everest?
You know, that was definitely tough. But for me, the hardest one was my Antarctic expedition, which was skiing. The goal of the expedition was to ski 600 miles across Antarctica, starting from the edge of the Western Antarctic ice shelf. This is called the Ronnie ice shelf, ski 600 miles across Antarctica to the South Pole. And the reason it was hard for me, you know, I thought, okay, I'll train as hard as I can, you know, and I'll be ready for this. And the altitude, the max altitude is only about 10,000 feet. So you don't have a lot of altitude. Sure, it's cold, but you know, you have your gear, you're the right clothing, you should be fine. And so I underestimated how difficult it would be for me to keep up with my teammates. So even though I trained as hard as I possibly could before the trip, my teammates who were, you know, 6'4", 230 pounds can drag that 150 pound sled a lot more quickly and a lot more efficiently than someone who's my size. So I'm 5'4", about 110, maybe at times 115 pounds. So the law of physics basically dictates that someone that's twice my weight and a foot taller than I am, they can drag 150 pound sled more easily than I can. So I was the slowest, weakest person on the team. And that was my first time for that. And I felt like, I just felt like I was worthless. And I felt like my team didn't want me there because I was slowing everybody down. And so I was struggling physically. And then I started struggling emotionally and psychologically because the struggle, the weight, you know, this physical struggle just kind of caused me to double down on my frustration. And I just, my, you know, when you're in a remote extreme environment, it's easy for your head to go to a very dark place. And so I just assumed nobody wants me on this team. I'm terrible. I'm horrible. But you can't quit because you're in the middle of Antarctica. There's nowhere to go. It's not like you're just going to like go into the lodge and grab
like a video game or something where you can pull yourself out. Or
yeah, you can't. You're there and you have to deal with it. But the way, so that was really hard for me because it was the physical struggle and the psychological, emotional struggle. But our team captain, Eric Phillips, and you know, probably remember this chapter six in my book On the Edge, but he devised this really sneaky way to help the situation where he and one of my other teammates, in a sneaky fashion, took weight out of my sled and lightened my sled, which allowed me to keep up with the team and ski faster. And it was just an amazing, you know, the way he handled it really let me keep my pride intact and sent a very strong message to me that he wanted me to succeed, that he cared about my well-being, that he wanted me, he valued me as a member of the team. And after my teammates took the weight out of my sled, you know, long story short, but my taller teammates were having trouble at the end of the day, every day, after you ski for 600 miles, you have to build, you build camp, you set up camp, you have to build snow barricades around all the tents to protect them from the elements. Cause Antarctica is the coldest, windiest place on earth. And the winds can destroy your tents, you know, in a matter of minutes. And so, you have to build barricades around the tents to protect them. So these taller people on the team, it was a struggle for them to shovel snow because our snow shovels were pretty short. And they were wrenching their backs, hunching over, bending over, trying to dig up these snow bricks to build the snow barricades. Well, at 5'4", I'm shorter to the ground. I can use a short snow shovel pretty efficiently. So after they took the weight out of my sled, you know, I wanted to do something to repay them for carrying extra weight for me. And so I became the designated snow shoveler. And every night, as often as I could, I grabbed that short snow shovel and I started shoveling snow and forming the bricks to build the barricades around everybody's tents. That was a way that I could play to my strength. I had assumed that being small was a weakness, but being shorter to the ground was actually a strength when it came to shoveling snow. So I became the best damn snow shoveler on the team. And I shoveled snow to make those barricades as often as I could. And when we got, you know, covered in snow during the night, when our gear and supplies got covered in snow, I'd wake up early and I'd grab the shovel and I would dig everybody's sleds out from underneath the buried snow so we could start skiing. And it really made me realize that we all have an area where we can contribute. We all have an area where we can add value. But if we are so focused on comparing ourselves to other people in areas where they are strong, you know, I was comparing myself to my teammates where they were so physically strong and capable of dragging the sled. If we compare ourselves to other people in areas where they are strong, we may never uncover the area where we can truly shine, where we can really contribute, where we can add value. You know, I couldn't drag that heavy sled very well, but I could be the best damn snow shoveler on the team. So it was just a good lesson to me in, you know, the comparison game. You're never going to win at that. You're never going to win at that. You got to find what makes you great. And there's a quote that I love from Muhammad Ali where he says, he struggled in school because he was learning disabled. And he said, you know, I never said I was the smartest. I said I was the greatest, right? And every single person listening to this podcast is the greatest at something.
No, I think, you know, it's a, you know, amazing teamwork all around. And, you know, the comparison thing is so true because, you know, it's like, I always tell myself that, like, trying to compete with myself, not like other people. If you get caught up in competing or comparing with other people, then you're basing your happiness on what they're doing.
Yeah, so true.
You know, so through that mental battle in Antarctica, you know, you said you were kind of feeling down at first because of the weight. how like do you pull yourself out of a situation like that mentally? Because I think a lot of people are probably going through things like that right now during, you know, COVID and, you know, isolation. So how do you like, or, you know, first your experience, but what would you recommend maybe to people on how to, you know, dig themselves out of a, like a mental battle like that?
So first of all, remember that struggling mentally, emotionally, psychologically is normal when you are in situations like what we've been in during COVID. So number one, do not beat yourself up when you need a mental health day or you have some time and realize, like, let yourself feel those emotions, you know. And what I remind myself of, so there's a couple of things. One is that a lot of times when people are struggling, it's fear-based struggle. They are afraid of something. There's some fear there about the unknown, or fear about knowing, or the known, right? You can fear the known, you can fear the unknown. You got to remember, first of all, you can be scared and brave at the same time. You can be scared and brave at the same time. And just because you're feeling fear or anxiety doesn't mean that you can't put one foot in front of the other. It doesn't mean that you can't keep going. So that's number one, be scared and brave at the same time. And just always also realize you are not alone. And whatever you are feeling, you are not alone. And I think it's so important to remind people on your team. So when I say team, it could be your work colleagues, it could be your family, could be your friends, you know, people in your community. Everybody's got a team, right? The people in your life. You have to remind them how important they are to you. And sometimes just a few kind words of encouragement when somebody who's struggling, you know, with somebody who's struggling, can completely change the outcome of a situation. So I want to remind people, do not underestimate the power of a few kind words. That can really change things. And also as leaders, we need to remind the people who are struggling that we are with them, right? They're not the only one. So I want to take you to an experience I had on Mount Elbrus, which is in Russia. It's the highest peak in Europe. And I remember, so after, it was the next mountain I climbed after Kilimanjaro. And it was my first glaciated mountain. So on snow for the first time. I didn't have snow. I had snow in Kilimanjaro only at the very top, but not every day. On Elbrus, we had it most days. And I remember struggling, feeling like I was really tired, like my legs just wanted to give out. I had an altitude headache. I felt sick to my stomach. And our guide, his name's Vern Tejas. If you guys want to Google him, you'll see all of his amazing accomplishments, including the first winter solo of Denali. He is badass. This guy is hardcore, right? So he's our guide on Mount Elbrus. And we stop for a break and he goes, "How's everybody doing right now?" And I'm thinking, I feel like I'm about to die, but everyone starts going, "Oh, feeling good, feeling great. Yeah, psyched, woohoo!" And like, let's keep going. And I'm thinking, what's wrong with me? So everyone's like, "Feeling good, feeling good, feeling good." And I just was quiet. I didn't say anything. And Vern goes, "Oh, guess it's only me who's feeling the altitude. Guess it's only me that feels, has an altitude headache. Guess it's only me whose legs are exhausted." And as soon as he said that, I was like, oh my God, I'm not alone. And if Vern Tejas feels like this is hard, there's nothing wrong with me. This is supposed to be hard. This is supposed to be challenging. This is supposed to not feel good. And because our leader, you know, expressed that vulnerability, oh, guess I'm the only one having a hard time, it made me feel like I could do it. It made me feel, it gave me confidence. It made me feel like there was nothing wrong with me and the way I was feeling, that it was normal. And because he said that, it changed my outlook. But when everyone else was saying, "Oh, feeling great, yeah, feeling good, got all the energy in the world," I thought, what's wrong with me? Maybe I'm not cut out for this. And it really kind of rocked my confidence. So it's really important as leaders, right, to our team to acknowledge, like, I'm struggling too. This is hard for everybody, because that actually can help people on your team feel like there's nothing wrong with them.
Yeah. And, you know, it's important for leaders, you know, and successful people maybe to, you know, like how he shared that experience, you know, that he was feeling altitude. You know, it's important in life and business or, you know, whatever, to, for leaders to, you know, share that, because maybe a lot of people who aren't there yet might think, you know, it's an overnight success, or like they've always been successful, always been a leader. But, you know, everyone's been through those struggles at the beginning, or you know, whatever they may be. So it's important as leaders. I think that was pretty cool that he shared that with you as well. I'm sure that kind of changed the morale of the hike. You know, for these hikes, you know, I know there's a lot of probably physical preparation, mental preparation. What kind of goes into, like, you know, when you're preparing for a big hike like that?
Well, so the most efficient way to train for a big hike is to simulate as closely as possible what you're going to be doing. So, for example, if you're getting ready to climb Mount Everest, no amount of running, swimming, cycling is going to properly prepare you. Yes, it's going to strengthen your cardiovascular system, and that is important. But if you're going to climb a big mountain, you have to get out to the mountains, right? And so for me, when I was climbing Everest, I climbed twice. First, I served as the team captain for the first American Women's Everest Expedition. And then I climbed again in 2010. But in 2002, I was living in the Bay Area, and the closest kind of high peak for me was Mount Shasta. It's about a 5 or 6 hour drive from where I lived. So I would drive up there and train on the weekends. And then in 2010, it was a bit easier because I was living in Golden, Colorado. So I was close to the mountains.
Nice.
But it was still hard. Like, it's, you know, I was always working full time and having to find sponsors for these trips. And I was training, and I just was, when I first started training, I thought, oh, these people who don't have to work are so lucky. Like, these independently wealthy people who don't have to scrounge for sponsors, and they don't have to work, and they can just train full time, and they're at such an advantage. And that really, I really did myself a disservice. Again, it goes back to that comparison thing, right? Comparing yourself to other people. Oh, they have all these advantages. You know, they're going to have all these advantages on the mountain because they didn't have to work during the week, and they could train full time, and they didn't have to have sponsor obligations. They could just write a check for the whole thing. And that, all that chatter in your head is a distraction from the task at hand. You have to block out that chatter and realize that once you're on the mountain doesn't care who has money, who doesn't have money. The mountain doesn't care who had to work during the week or who didn't. You know, you just have to show up and focus and do your job and block out all those other things. And so I'm actually listening to an audiobook right now by somebody I really respect and admire. Her name's Carrie Loren. She was one of the Navy's first female F-14 pilots. She just wrote a book called Span of Control. And it's such a great book. And it's all about how to block out the stuff that doesn't matter, figure out truly what you need to focus on. And I wish I had that book. I wish I'd read the book, just came out this week, but I wish that I had it on my first Everest climb, because that comparison game, you know, is, it really puts you at a disadvantage. So I just, on my second climb in 2010, I just focused on, okay, here, I have these mountains. I'm going to train as hard as I can. I'm going to be as focused as I can. I do have all these other things going on in my life that I have to focus on, that I have to take care of. But when I'm in the mountains, I'm going to be focused on that. So getting out to the mountains and training is really the most important thing. If you're training for an Antarctic expedition or a North Pole expedition, that's different because you're not climbing. Right. You're dragging a sled. So for me, the best way to train for that Antarctic expedition, and I didn't live in snow or ice at the time. I lived in Northern California near a beach. So I would drag car tires to simulate dragging 150-pound sled, and I would harness a car tire to my waist and drag it through the sand at the beach. I started with one car tire, worked my way up to dragging two car tires, eventually dragging three car tires to simulate dragging that sled. So I really want people to think about the goals that they have and what does it take to achieve that goal. And when you're preparing for that goal, try to go through the motions as closely as possible, because that's what's going to help you really when it's game time.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, everyone on that beach is wondering if you're building a truck or something at the time.
Well, you know what's so funny? Okay, so the tires, I'm dragging these tires along the beach, and the tires would collect any debris along the sand. Oh, yeah. So they would collect beer bottles and syringes and condom wrappers and dead birds and whatever trash, like whatever was on the beach. So all that, like this big heap of trash started to accumulate, and I was dragging it with me because it would get caught along the tires. And people thought I was homeless because I was dragging all this stuff with me along the beach, and they would come up and try to give me money, which I would take typically. But I know I looked really funny dragging because all the stuff along the sand, big piles of seaweed, everything was.
Right. That's funny. You know, so you have a New York Times bestselling book, On the Edge. You know, I think you make some great similarities in the book, you know, talking about, you know, business, leadership, entrepreneurship, and kind of how it relates to your experiences through, you know, these extreme adventures. And, you know, I really think it does relate to entrepreneurship, because I always say entrepreneurship is kind of like getting punched in the face every day.
Yeah.
And, you know, people who aren't in entrepreneurship might not really get what that means, but can you kind of like speak to, you know, the similarities, what you think between, you know, business leadership and, you know, hiking?
Yeah. I think
there's definitely some amazing similarities.
There are so many similarities. So first of all, when you're climbing a mountain like Everest, progress is not necessarily linear. You climb to, like, when you start at base camp, you climb to camp one, then you have to climb back down to base camp. And then a couple days later, you climb to camp two, and then you come back down to base camp. And then you climb to camp three. So people think you just climb up the mountain, right? I need to go from A to Z. And so I'm just going to go in a straight line and get there. Well, when you're climbing a mountain, you have to keep coming back down to base camp, because coming back down to base camp, you want to come back down to a lower elevation, because that's what allows you to regain some strength. So when you're higher up on the mountain, your body is deteriorating due to the altitude. So you keep coming back down so you can eat, sleep, hydrate, and let your muscles like regenerate. So you're spending a lot of time climbing what feels like backwards, back down to base camp instead of toward the summit. And so it's a lot like entrepreneurship, because progress is not always linear. Progress does not always happen in one particular direction. And sometimes you have to backtrack a bit in order to eventually get to where you want to be, right? You got to back up. And so you cannot look at that as defeat. You cannot look at that as losing ground as an entrepreneur. When you go back to square one, you got to look at that as, you know, an opportunity to regroup, regain some strength, so you're better out of the gates the next time around. The other thing is, you're going to have all of these things that affect your success that you have zero control over, right? Yeah. Some things you do have control over, but not everything. And it's the same thing in the mountains. There are all these things that are going to affect your climb that you cannot control. But what you have to realize, like, if you want to be successful, you realize the environment around you is going to be shifting and changing. You have to be able to take action based on the situation at the time and not based on your plan. So as entrepreneurs, of course, you're going to have a plan. Plan keeps you organized, keeps you on track.
Blowing up.
Right? Yeah. Your plan. Of course, you're going to have a plan, but you cannot be hell-bent on sticking to that plan no matter what. You want to be much more focused on executing based on what is going on at the time, because whatever plan you came up with last year, last month, last week, this morning, your plan is already outdated as soon as it's finished.
Always when you're changing.
Environments that are constantly shifting and changing.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, and just remember, like, you cannot control the environment, only the way you react to it.
Yeah. And it's like I always say too, you know, don't take it personal, you know, when stuff goes bad. And, you know, same thing probably with hiking, you know, there might be a storm that you have no control over, and you have to go back and, you know, reset. And I think the same thing is for business and entrepreneurship, where, you know, industries are changing all the time. You know, like you said, your plan A is probably going to get thrown out the window.
Yeah.
Most certainly.
Yep.
So,
oh, sure.
Well, Allison, I appreciate you coming on today. This was, you know, great talking to you. For everyone listening, be sure to order her book, On the Edge. And thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks so much.
Thank you.